reason for the word.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
They just can't be like a dangerous place.
Yeah.
That's right. It was your ride.
Oh, the family. Yeah, that's when I started to have coffee.
Yeah. Actually, Jesse and I are going to take it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's always carpool, so this will be also the carpool.
Okay.
When you're speaking, we need to have some fun.
No. Really
nice. You're gearing up for the tractor parade?
Oh, we are gearing up for the tractor parade.
Yep. Yeah, I remember going to one of their meetings to kind of help with their traffic control, and I was like, you have to push everybody to one exit.
I don't know what I mean.
It's the same.
It's especially exciting when they,
it's not good for our climate footprint, but they attach to the, to one of the tractors, the giant things that power hot air balloons. And then they left in the app that, quite exciting.
Yeah.
Not sure what that does for our traffic control. Definitely a crowd pleaser.
Hopefully it doesn't rain on you guys, because I know that was another big concern too.
It never seems to dampen the enthusiasm.
Oh no, people were like, we're still going to get one.
Well, good for you guys. And then it's probably worth it.
Hi everybody.
We thought we'd have a party and we'd start with that.
It lasted like
3 minutes. All right. So you moved your office? Or
what?
You moved the executive?
I did. Oh, yeah.
Would you like green tea? That'd be perfect.
Okay. Can I give you a green tea?
These do sound very good.
Okay, yeah.
What did you think
it is? Oh, I think it is a water with electrolytes. It is the electrolyte tablet.
Is that what I thought it
was?
All right, sure. And it's something that you can use in wildland.
Okay, let's see how it's going to work out.
Lots of shovels and grubbing in that.
Welcome.
Hi.
It was just going to start.
It was just a perfect timing.
Okay. Seeing that we've got quorum and everybody's in their chairs, let's call this meeting to order at 6:32, according to the rules of Atomic Clock. City of West Sacramento?
Present.
City of Winter?
Here.
City of Davis?
Here.
Director at Large?
Here.
Okay. Thank you very much. Welcome,
So this time we decided that we were going to experiment a little bit with the agenda, and you will notice that we have a consent agenda. So assuming that there's no member of the audience who wishes to speak on either of the items, and assuming that if there are no changes to the minutes and the January 2024 meeting date works for the commission, it would be possible to move both items at the same time by moving the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. A discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? Passes. Thank you very much. So that takes us on to the regular calendar and Madam Director.
So our first item is Brian Allen is going to be giving us an update on the downtown urban transit center study.
evening, many members. The item before you relates to the Woodland Transit Center study that have been looking back in time. There was a lot of work that was done on this back, prior to the pandemic, and then it kind of went dormant. And then back in May, our senior planner, Courtney Williams, who can't be with us here today because I think on vacation, brought this item to you in terms of a consulting agreement to kind of pick up where we left off and to kind of follow through on our board's desire to relocate the existing transit center from County Fair Mall over to a location in downtown Woodland. And so what we're doing here today is bringing back some of the findings and results from that analysis that we've done, and primarily in the form of three different alternatives that we'll be sharing with you, as well as some of the process that we went through to get to that point. So without further ado, let's go ahead and advance the clock. Oh, that's hard for me to read. So a little bit of recap. A lot of this you actually saw back in your May meeting where we shared with you what the scope of work for Kimberly Warren, who's our consulting team, the work we would be asking them to do. So you can see those on the screen there. So some of the key things that we needed them to do was to kind of help us determine what the facility requirements and what the constraints were for transit center that we might want to locate in the downtown, to help us, identify some sites and evaluate their benefits and drawbacks, to help us come to a decision on, finding a preferred location and developing that idea, and identifying features and cost estimates that would be required in order to relocate from the mall to downtown. They're also scoped to take a preferred design to 10%, and give us that cost estimate. I think that we actually got 10% design for the three alternatives that you see today, and that's roughly about what 10% design looks like. And also to look at the possibility of a longer term location for us, so that we could expand if necessary. Among the alternatives that we would be considering. So our priority tonight is to focus on that short term, between 5 to 7 years is too much uncertainty and speculation for us to be thinking long term at this point, but all of the sites that we have that are under consideration do have expansion possibilities. So that was part of our analysis as well. Next slide, please. Okay, well, let's orient ourselves to, that is not a long right. Try one more. Oh, yeah, there we go. All right, they didn't know I turned on animation. So, our transit center is in the existing southwest parking lot of the County Fair Mall. You can see that orange, reddish circular area, and the state of the County Fair Mall is not what it once used to be. All those green stretch areas are areas of the mall that are no longer active. So we really are kind of isolated in that southwest corner of the property, and not a great place to be. Really, you want your transit center to be near active uses where there's some trip generators and where people want to want to be. Next slide. So, piggybacking on that topic a little bit more. So, as mentioned, existing malls is largely vacant. There's lighting issues, not as much lighting as you would want to have at a transit center. It's a private lot that we are leasing, so we don't have full control over its maintenance. There's safety concerns that we hear about a lot. Don't have as many passenger amenities as you would want to have at a transit center. It's not close to key destinations anymore. And access to it is actually not really that easy unless you're driving to park and take the bus, which is kind of what defeats the purpose of taking transit. There's there's lots of times we need to do that, right? Because some people might want to drive and then, you know, take the bus onto, like campus or something, to avoid parking. That's a good use of parking, but, you don't want that to be disproportionately how people arrive at the transit center. So, next slide. So we have completed a lot of work between, April and now. There's just been a lot of evaluation done looking at, you know, what the, type and size and number of bus bays we would need for a phase one, relocation and potentially a phase two. Looking at different types of configurations of the buses and the space that they need to be able to get in and out of the transit center. Also factoring in, what sorts of loading areas and accessibility we need, for our passengers at any location, what type of operational support and facilities are needed. So it's not just having space for the buses to come in, but also having areas where relief vehicles can come in and relieve drivers from their shift, or if a repair vehicle needs to come in, and also proximity to areas where drivers can rest or use the restrooms on their break. So all those are important facilities to support a transit center. We've also looked at the surrounding context of where a transit center should be located. In this case, we're specifically looking at the downtown and making sure that the land uses in the areas we're considering are compatible and also compatible with the transportation system downtown as well. We've mapped the downtown to identify which streets have the cross-sectional width to accommodate the train movements and the needs of our varied size buses, and also to look at sort of the immediate striking uses on potential locations to make sure that there's compatibility between those immediately fronting land uses. And so that's how, with those seven, milestones passed, we were able to come up with three alternative locations to present to you. Next slide, please. So there are additional criteria that we needed from an operational standpoint that we're also looking at. So really, one of our imperatives is to try to relocate from the County Fair Mall to downtown as quickly as possible. We're also looking to see, does the surrounding environment, enable us to do that? Are there trees that are, sort of overhanging and blocking, our buses? Are there power lines or power poles that the guidelines that need to be relocated? Are there landscape strips that need to have like a concrete pad for in order to have our ADA access accommodated, right? And then also a key analytical area is making sure that our existing routes are kind of compatible with our downtown location. So those are the routes that are currently, sort of intermixing at the existing transit center. So we have to make sure that we don't increase route times or delay excessively in order to accommodate this transit center shift. And then, of course, the short-term functionality. Whatever site we do choose, we need to be thinking about it in terms of at least a 5 to 7 year time frame for us to stay there. Next slide. So with those criteria established and all that background analysis done, kind of landed on three different alternatives that you can see there on the screen highlighted in orange. The alternative one is sort of the three-legged, three segments there, bordered by College and Court Street. Alternative two is about a block to the west, fronting the county administration building, and I think that also includes the former courthouse as well. And then there's alternative three is on 3rd Street between Main Street and Court. as well. So those are the three that we're looking at. And there was a lot of analysis done throughout a much larger downtown area, pretty much bounded by your field of vision on the slide there. Just looking at lots of different possibilities, and for example, those south of Main Street were largely excluded because of either short block spaces, narrow streets, and or access issues from East Street. So that's why you don't see any alternative south of Main Street. Next slide. All right, so let's look at alternative number. Want to stop there? And if you have any questions.
And now those two orange dots, one is to the west, is along that Court Street all the way to the west. Is that an alternate 1A or?
No, you'll see when we get to the next slide, you'll see that there's less pullover on all three of those legs. And they're all on sort of the right side of each segment. So
they're not, okay.
Yeah.
There's something else.
Yeah, and before we move on, does anyone else have a question at this point? Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, please.
And if you have a printout in front of you, it might be easier to see here, but I'll try to describe what we're looking at. So on the south leg at College Street, on the east side, you have two bus bays there. On the south side of Court Street, you have two bus bays there as well. And then on the west leg, where there's an existing bus stop turnout, you would have two more buses that would be able to pull over there. So all of these alternatives have benefits and drawbacks to them. This one has, and we'll go over that table in just a moment, but we'll just go through each of these alternatives, we'll give you a chance to look at them visually and just sort of absorb them as you're looking at them. But what you see on some segments are red lines, and what those represent are areas of curb space that the consultants recommend for different types of transit-related uses, not for buses to pull over, but for people to pick up and drop off, also for those relief vehicles that we were referring to earlier.
And so before we move on to the alternatives, I don't know that it's entirely clear to everyone, or it's not to me, but that alternative one, this is sort of like putting an entire transit center onto streets at three separate locations is a single alternative.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah, because I think the minimum number of stalls that we need in order to do a near-term move is four, and this one, I think, provides, up to six, and that's just sort of a function of the space that's available in this area. Okay, let's move on to that. We can always come back to these and look at them in a little bit more detail. I know that the drawings are kind of engineering, but hopefully we can kind of, just visualize what they're proposing to do. Alternative two is that one that fronts the county administration offices and the former courthouse, so we'll have a block over to the east. This one clearly has a different and more coherent identity as a potential transit center, but also could accommodate up to six buses as well, and is in front of probably higher trip generating uses than perhaps the other alternative one location, and all contained within a single street segment. A couple things to think about here are the presence or absence of traffic signals, which will help with safety, both in terms of bus maneuvering and also for passengers potentially crossing the street. We like to have controlled intersections where we can, because that improves safety for both our drivers and for our passengers and anybody else who's on the street. Any questions on this one before we move on?
You did say it was higher trip generating location. So aside from, say, the district attorney and the county offices, what is over there?
Well, relative to the alternative one, just the presence of the county administration office alone is probably more, provides more, more writers than the alternative one does. And they're both sort of proximate, equally proximate to the library. You've also got the post office there, and there's, you know, some other attributes that are present in the street that you don't have on alternative one. In general, one of the reasons why we're looking to move downtown is just because the downtown in general has more trip generating uses, and I think we've had JCOG do some analysis for us, and there's about 3,500 employees that work sort of in the area that we're looking to relocate in, sort of between Main Street and College Street. So I think that they all have benefits in that regard, particularly compared with the County Fair Mall. But then relative to each other, some have slightly better prospects than others.
First of all, this is so exciting. I often walk to Century Mall, and I just hate it at the end. Because I don't want to be in my bike, and I don't want to get on the bus to go to the mall, but I often walk over there, and then I'm really excited. But that being said, I feel like from what the materials, and maybe that we'll go through this in more detail, I'm understanding sort of like the routing changes, I guess, in the chart. It isn't clear to me, like, you said that one of them will cause more, that some says it will deeper route in the downtown and increase route travel time. It seems pretty nominal. Would it go to the County Fair Mall and stay out of town, or would it not go there?
That's a good question. I haven't looked closely enough at that assumption because I don't know if they're intending to go deep in like they do now in the County Fair Mall, or if the intent would be to just sort of continue on East Street and like have a stop on East Street.
Mm-hmm. But it certainly wouldn't be getting on at Main Street on the 15th. It's going to still go down.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did just receive the additional analysis from the consultant very late last week on what the actual proposed routing would look like for each one. They qualitatively analyzed the sort of the effects that each alternative would have on each of the routes that it would be going into the downtown. But we weren't prepared to share that yet at this meeting because we haven't had a chance to look at it on as closely as we want to make sure that there's accuracy there and the assumptions they're making.
Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Thank you,
a couple of questions. So it looks like alternatives 2 and 3, and we'll take the 3 for sure, but have quite a bit of tree coverage. Is that able to be more prudent to this, like shade, or will the trees have to be like removed in any case, or is it too early to sell?
They did do some analysis on that. I think on Court Street we were in pretty good shape with the tree canopy, which is a good thing because in the summertime it gives shade and relief, and it's also a nice pleasant experience. Trees are always a good thing. I want to say that on Third Street there might have been some tree obstructions that would need some trimming back. But ideally, you know, there wouldn't need to be any fall tree removal.
I think where we would need to see tree removal is if we need to upgrade the sidewalk and the trees are where, you know, the trees in the median between the sidewalks down the street, or if the sidewalk needs to be wide and fitted to accommodate ADA requirements, and the trees would need to be removed to accommodate that. And when we get to the pros and cons, one of the good things about Court Street is those sidewalks are already ADA, so therefore there's not a lot of modifications that would be needed.
Yeah, Kirk Street at that location at least is a very set up for public uses.
Yeah. And as Autumn was mentioning, like sometimes like the positioning of how the bus needs to be positioned on a certain street segment might conflict right with where, you know, right with where a tree is, and that would just, you know, require the tree removal in order to accommodate that that facility, that location. But you do intend to avoid those that as much as possible. So next slide. Now looking at alternative three, which is the easternmost location on Third Street. When you see the next slide, you're going to need to kind of rotate 90 degrees so that Third Street will be, south will be to your left and north will be to your right. So go ahead and advance the slide. And so this is between Main and Court Street, and you can see that incoming, well, I don't know if they're incoming or they're outgoing, but on the southern, southeastern leg, you have two stalls there for two buses to come in and dwell, and then on the northwest leg is where two more buses would be able to be stationed. The reason why they're offset like this is because the road is too narrow to accommodate them on the same sort of segment, so they're split with the alleyway separating the two of them. And this is a four-stall location where the other two stick stalls. You still think we can make this work operationally, but that's one of the major distinctions. Signalized intersections at both ends. Coincidentally, there isn't a whole lot of active uses on this segment, but we'll get into those pros and cons on, I think, the next slide. Thank you, Daisy. All right, so let's look at alternative one. I'm sorry to give you a little bit of a picture there. To reorient you to where alternative one was. And so some of the benefits here is that, it is close to off-street parking that people could use if they're commuting, if they're commuters and trying to hop on one of our express buses or the 42. Does use an existing turnout facility, which is there on 4th Street as well. There's less removal of parking spaces compared to some of the other alternatives. Disadvantages include sort of that complex design. There is quite a bit of some severe lane shifts that have to occur on that south leg of College Street in order to accommodate the bus parking, a travel lane, and a left turn lane, and a southbound lane. And that could be problematic from the city of Woodlands perspective because it's a significant shift from the southbound cars that are on the north side of that intersection, so they're really having to move over. Essentially, when they're stopped at the intersection, they're looking, they would be directly in front of left turning cars in the opposite direction. There are also some concerns that you have related to this, related to safety and pedestrians. There might be cases where riders or pedestrians would have to cross two lanes of an intersection of that College and Court intersection to catch one of the buses. And, depending on whether or not they hit the signal timing correctly, they could be, trying to cross two lanes of, two directions of traffic to catch a bus that might be departing. And so, you would want to minimize that as much as possible. Again, referring to Somali's point about the deeper travel time, this does go a little bit deeper to the west from 42. The other route doesn't affect quite as much, according to the initial analysis that I've seen from Kim and Horn. But we need to do some additional number crunching on what that means for the 42 A and B, which currently have a long way over at County Fair Mall in some cases. So ultimately, our goal is to try to improve that travel time overall and just need to figure out how this factors into that. Any questions on the pros and cons for alternative one?
I think I only say that I know that intersection really well because the travel authority has properties further down.
and it's really narrow and quite congested. And there's a weird intersection of uses between people who are live in the neighborhood, as well as residential properties, and then public and commercial uses all kind of come together in that rectangle for a good one.
Yeah, and you also have a lack of identity. I don't know that our writers would recognize this alternative as actually being a transit center because you don't see all the buses and the infrastructure as being a coherent place. Whereas you get more of that with the other alternatives. Okay, alternative two, that's the one between First and Third Street on Court. This one requires least amount of rerouting because many of our bus routes are already traveling on Court Street, and it's pretty much ready to go with a lot of the infrastructure that you would want. Automation is ADA compliant. There's pretty good lighting over there, even like pedestrian scale lighting, as Lisa mentioned, is set up for public use and institutional uses. So it's in pretty good shape for a relocation there. There are some potential safety issues that we might want to talk with City Woodland about, particularly the uncontrolled crosswalk at 2nd Street and also the unsignalized intersection at 1st Street. The low-hanging fruit is probably the 2nd Street crossing and perhaps converting that to a three-way stop. Those are topics that we might want to have a conversation we might want to have with the City of Woodland. There is a lot of higher value on-street parking spaces that would need to be converted for transit use, so that's something that that we're thinking about and considering in this analysis and along with our partners in the City of Woodland. There is one residential use fronting the street there, and that can sometimes be problematic. I'm not saying that's always driving our decision making, but it's something that we are also thinking about, and so that's one of the disadvantages of that location. If you really do want to avoid having a transit center in front of it. Alternative three. All right, so this is the third thing we were talking about. Pros are turning a negative into a benefit. Even though there's a lot of parking spaces that would need to be converted for transit use, the good news is that there are parking spaces in front of empty lots for the most part. We have a parking lot on the northwest segment. You've got a torn down car dealership on the southeast, and then you don't have any active uses fronting the street. On the other two segments, instead, we have a lot of availability there and a lot of off-street parking available for folks who are not using the transit there. This is a location that might require comparatively more infrastructure upgrade, doesn't have as good lighting. Sidewalks have ADA compliance issues in some locations. Not very active in this area, so you don't have as many people, sort of in the area walking around, not as many eyes on the street, so from a safety standpoint, maybe not as good as the other locations. And then there's also, the road is narrower than, say, Court Street, and so the train movements will be a little bit tighter. There might be occasions where, like, the bus has to stop and wait for, an outgoing vehicle to clear in order to make that. Make some of those turns, so that's what on our mind. Okay, next step. So we do still have some additional analysis I mentioned. Oh, you have a question?
Well, I actually want to get back to the purpose for it being here. So are you guys on our next step and you're going to ask for input from members on this so that you get what you need for your next analysis?
Yes.
So let me put it to go through that, and then we'll take most of that.
Okay. So we do have some initial, some additional analysis that we need to do in order to really land on a preferred alternative. And we also have conversations that we need to occur with, that need to occur with the city of Woodland. We're also going to do some input from our riders who are currently, using the existing transit center and what their perceptions are of that and what they would like to see in a relocation. So we'll have some ridership input on that, and we'll have a survey as well that people can fill out. Again, that your input tonight, this will also go to the Woodland City Council, and then it will go to our board for a final action on here. And then from the analysis standpoint, just developing a little bit more to be able to answer some questions that our board will be asking us related to cost and timing and so forth. And I think that's the last one.
Okay, so thank you. Why don't we take a round from committee members, and then let them do public comment, and then take another round from each other over. So, Ola, I think you're first, and you are second, and you're second.
I'm just curious about which alternative the city prefers and what kind of input they provide. And I guess, based on my knowledge of what happened in West Sacramento, the city was an active participant in the plan for that station, for that transit center, and then contributed significantly to the cost of it. And I'm wondering if Woodland plans to participate financially as well as in the planning, and the county as well. I mean, the county's duty structure, right? It's sort of having facilities, and what their thinking is. Are they open to it, or do they like the idea, or I would think they would, but.
So they're really good questions. To answer the first question, yes, we've been coordinating very closely with the city of Woodland, the staff, the city manager. They've been very helpful in letting us know which streets they feel like are problematic in the downtown for their needs in terms of buses circulating around and giving us some sense of what the traffic impacts might be, since this analysis doesn't include a traffic analysis for it. But yeah, you can coordinating very closely with them. We've also brought this to the City of Woodland City Council one time to get their initial feedback. They seem to be supportive of the relocation as well. In terms of financial contribution, we're expecting that this phase one won't require a lot of financial contribution because we're trying to do it quickly and we're trying to do it without having to do a whole lot of infrastructure construction. As we've been having conversations with them, related to a longer-term transit center, there's lots of possibilities, including different locations different opportunities that we can definitely partner for a longer-term transit center. But our focus right now has been to relocate from the county.
Get out of the county terminal. Yes. Okay.
Thank you. So I guess I have a couple questions I'm trying to figure out. So you said that there's some sort of it feels like this decision about whether to maybe have more of an identity would be some dependent on what that identity, what they're proposing for that, right? So I just would love to know if there's other diagrams or other things they provided to sort of help with the branding aspect, because I think that's an important one. Decide which one is the better option. So that's one of my questions. I have a couple. I don't know if I should just rattle them off, right? I can do one other one. But I guess the other question I have is this question of, I noticed that there's in each of the sections, or at least in alternative one, I see this area for driver brakes, a driver bus release. So it says, and that just triggers something for me. It's we understand that one of the challenges with the kind of null is that the drivers have to go so far to have a break, right? They have to go in. They don't have a good facility, the restroom and stuff. And so have they identified locations on these sites that would alleviate that and provide drivers with access to nearby locations that would make breaks shorter and more easy for them? Just feel like that would make the whole route better for everyone, as well as, of course, improving the outcomes for the drivers. students had to struggle to get over all the had to walk through bark. So it was my first event.
Yeah, let me take the first one because I'm trying to think back on that unity. Those are good questions, Molly, for sure. I don't think I remember seeing anything as far as a drug or break, so, thinking on the Court Street option, we do have the admin building that is accessible for drivers can go in. But making after hours once the building closes, it might be a little tricky, but, those are the questions for sure. Something definitely is a factor.
Trying to
weigh the trade-offs, knowing that we need to relocate somewhere in downtown Woodland, factoring in all of the operational needs, safety needs, location needs, rider needs. We're definitely thinking about, are those facilities available in the vicinity, but we haven't pinpointed an actual facility yet. We'll need to do that as we zero in on a preferred alternative. Your question related to sort of identity and branding, and we will be looking at for the next phase of development. Here will be after we select an alternative to look at what amenities are there now and what amenities are needed to support the transit center, right? Because you don't just take a block space and just assume that people are going to know that we're where your hub is for your transit system. So, we're going to need to be looking at what space is available for benches, track receptacles, all those kinds of things that you expect to see. It wouldn't be like that full-scale transit center in capital like you might expect with a longer-term option, but we do want to make sure that there are supportive amenities for riders and our drivers. At whatever location you choose.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. And thank you. A lot of great discussion so far. First of all, of course, just really happy to see this progressing and really appreciate all the efforts that have gone into this. I mean, definitely will be a game changer for travel, especially for travel from data schools, and where we have to go through that county for a mile if you're taking transit. There's a lot of discussion about travel time, but certainly for those Davis Golden trips, regardless of any of these three options, will drastically improve transit travel times between Davis and Golden, of course. But of course, we don't want that coming with the cost of making the overall route longer, which then, of course, affects the ability to operate service. The current frequencies would require more funding, which can require taking away funding from other services, stuff like that. So one question that I have with that in mind is if there's been a discussion of transit priority infrastructure, like potential T-jump lanes or transit signal priorities at the new transit center, because that's something we could really, even if the distance of the route winds up being slightly longer, that's something we could really help with the travel time to make sure that, certainly nothing is lost and ideally something's gained, but making sure that it's when I saw there was a big line of traffic. I was at the coffee shop on Court Street earlier, and there was a big line of cars that had me thinking about that. That's one question is the transit priorities, and my other question is if I know it's the one great thing about living in Davis is having the train station and the connections that provides in the inner city, the regional connections and really the inner city connections that provides, it would make it a lot easier to get to a lot of places throughout the state, really. But Woodland currently doesn't have that type of inner city connectivity. So I'm wondering if there's been any coordination with inner city transit services. Like, I know there's been discussion of a new, I think it's called the Salmon Runner, the line they want to start zero emission bus service between Sacramento and Shasta County. And of course, there also are Amtrak buses and Greyhound buses that go north, but don't currently stop in Woodland, I believe. So if there's been any coordination on those, possibly using the new transit center.
Yes, there's also a good question. There's more in terms of service planning than, relocation of the transit center itself. So, biting off what we can chew and what we need to do in the short term, which is trying to get out of the County Fair Mall into downtown Woodland. With respect to transit signal priority, The attachment to the staff report includes the planning process that we went through, and it identifies sort of phase one priorities and phase two priorities. Prior to our actual move from the mall to a new location, we won't be in a position to implement any transit signal prioritization, but you know, as we look at longer-term planning, one of the things that I'm looking to include in our 10-year CIP is to sort of look at that network-wide, and so we wouldn't just be looking at it in terms of like one city or one location. We'd be looking at the entire network and whether or not we can introduce that technology to our entire network. So doesn't really help now, but we are thinking about it.
I think if I could, that opens the possibility to jumpstart that thinking as you're planning for the whole system, as you're planning for the transit current, that can be a nice way to start that. But other questions for first draft? Yes.
You mentioned routes 42A and B, but I presume other local bus routes would go through there too, and they would be offset schedule-wise, so they're not backing up.
Yes. I'll leave that to Daisy, but I think that's a safe assumption. They can't all converge at the same time, but we do have to do some precise scheduling, right, to of the rerouting to make sure that everything is compatible and synchronized.
My favorite subject. Definitely going to have to look at some mathematical stuff. Yeah, definitely. There's no way we can have all of our buses kind of ending at the same time. So then we would have to plan accordingly so that they're able to kind of space it out so that they're not all there at once. And we wouldn't even have enough days either way. Because if we're looking at, you know, the cash rate route 215, our 42, all of the Whitman locals, and not only that, but then you have up to the line of service that could potentially be popping there as well. So there's just not enough space. So we would definitely have to time all of our routes so that they get there close enough so that people can obviously make their transfers, but that the buses aren't all there at the same time.
We're also looking at locations where we can stage. So if there is a congestion issue at the new location, then they would know ahead of time and where they can stage and just sort of arrive as another buses departing.
For people that walk the bus stop there, that's one thing, but I can imagine Uber and Lyft and people dropping people off, maybe on a side street, something like that. But they'd be given priority so they don't have to say parking lot here, but move that post office.
Are you asking if
yeah, like a short-term parking space, like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, so they can park, unload somebody, and just be gone?
Like the ride-hailing services?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what the passenger loading and unloading zones would be for.
Actually, yeah, I just had one more, question or point, but you know, this is that I just heard the 215, and I know it's in terms of travel time, but right now, I mean, looks like it goes all the way down Main Street and has to go down to get to the county terminal. But, looks like in the plan for the 215 to be, for the terminus to be at the new transit center, just going, that's something we could actually be saving quite a bit of travel time and operational resources that could go into, that could then be reinvested in the system.
And nothing is really set in stone right now, Andy, but that, I believe that is the goal, is to start moving everything over to the new transit center.
That said, I mean, there is a large apartment complex that's owned by the casino called On Run at the corner of Matt Moore and Gibson, and the 215 does service that, and I think that's actually probably a pretty important location for us to continue serving. So I don't think that downtown is there. It wouldn't make sense for it to stop at downtown and not go further east.
Okay, thanks, Buster. That's good to know.
They're not necessarily into the mall, so
the route could start, you know, heading towards Etch Creek. It could start at the county terminal and then just hit the transit center on the way.
So before we take a second round, let's open it up for public comment, and then we'll come back to get some feedback. So with that, is there anybody, member of the public, online or
in the room who would like to speak on this subject?
No comments online.
Seeing none, I think it's Molly and then Patrick.
Okay, so I just want to clarify so that you're presenting this to, excuse me, you're presenting this to the Woodland City Council on the next meeting? Or,
we have not scheduled that yet.
Okay.
We're hoping mid-December, if we're able to
stay
on schedule.
I just thought maybe it would be nice to have some CAC presence there at that meeting.
Thank you. Just a couple quick questions. I was looking at table 3, and does that subsequent changes more bays could be added? Is that for every alternative, property alternative?
Yeah, that was the intent, was to make sure that each location that we select had a scan and capabilities. We didn't include the drawing for the base 2 because we're not focused on that, but yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And then, thank you. For e-bike, it says e-bike and micro-mobility device charging stations coming in subsequent phases. I didn't see anything about, electric vehicle charging for, car chargers. Is that something that might be included, or would that also be subsequent charging
phases? Well, it depends on what time horizon we're talking about. If we're talking about short-term, that's going to be an on-street facility. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking at. And I would say that the prospect of us as a transit agency installing electric vehicle charging infrastructure is pretty slim, especially when there's electric publicly accessible EV charging available in lots of public lots already. As we look at a potentially long-term transit center, and depending on the location, then those opportunities might open up depending on the location and the opportunities there to integrate that into a more significant design.
Yes, this is 5 to 7 years out, as I understand it.
Am I able to ask one more question?
Absolutely not.
Okay, what's in
here? Thank you. This is a figure 2, the map of the next the multifamily housing. I noticed that there is quite a significant barrier in Highway 113 that passes between, the center and these housing areas. So I'm just curious because, and this is where I'll ask for part of my ignorance, I don't know the area very well. Could that be an area people would be able to walk in? Is that 113 going to be a significant, barrier to walking or to cycling to the transit center from there?
Oh, yeah. So if you're referring to this, this is a blow up of this area right here.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, then the answer is no.
Well,
113 is a barrier.
Yeah, of course. So I was envisioning all of this as housing, and so I thought it was going to be a huge barrier, but it's at least all that dense housing on the same side as this area, so that is comforting. Thank you.
There's a new bike boulevard over the 115 that connects the Spring Lake neighborhood, which is on the other side of the 115 to downtown. It's not perfect because it's not like a fully connected bike route, but it theoretically will allow people, it will easier access. It depends if you move downtown. There'll be a paper bike ride for a little longer.
We're anxiously waiting for the children.
It's just off of the mall. So there's a channel of 25 for the bridge connect.
So I guess for my part, I'd say I know all three locations really well. Option 2 has sort of the best infrastructure. It is actually not that far from the solar carport. Patrick's point, there is solar electric charging in that lot. So all alternatives 1 and 2 are both fairly close to that existing infrastructure, which could also handle drop off and pick up for further lifts and other transit drops.
I would say the option three, that is a pretty tough location in terms of ancillary uses and lack of amenities for drivers and for riders. Serious development at this point. So I don't know that option three would be my favorite. I think option one just has so many crowded uses together that don't match. So those are just my comments on that. Super excited to echo what Andy said and all the hard work and coming up with the options. And is there any more feedback you'd like to give them on this?
Okay, I have a question. Do you want to prefer, like, are we supposed to choose one or like that?
And we're just taking feedback here. You know, it's all work. Oh, did you want to comment?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, if the committee has some strong preferences, I think that would be helpful.
What about the idea? It's proposed.
Yeah, I think option two actually offers the lowest price point for infrastructure development, the most amenities, closest to trip generator, and really good access to follow on activities like coffee and restaurants and amenities. Of the three options, it has the most there with the least drawback, and that you can preserve the majority of free canopies of a big plus.
If I stand corrected, if you have a preferred alternative, we would love to hear.
We did list this as an action item, so if the committee wants to take action, you can. But it's certainly not a requirement.
I'm happy to make the motion to recommend recommend option two, because it seems like we have all the benefits that our chair was just discussing that I agree with, and then it seemed like that was staff preferred option two. Be great to have that recommendation to support you all as you go to the city council and ultimately to the board.
So I hear a motion. Do I hear a second? Okay. I hear a second from Molly. Do I hear discussion?
Oh, I have an oddball question. Where is the Transit Center for Arcade in Sacramento? Do they have?
I'd say the train station is one. I don't know if you have others, but that's an obvious one where you have many modes of transportation converging into a location.
Alright.
I mean, generally, with an agency with a service area that stage, there would not typically would be multiple. But I don't know
what
they are.
I only know about the ones in downtown.
Well, I've seen this as one of the main drivers for this, is to have a place where the drivers can use the restroom, get a cup of coffee, have your holdovers, and then four to go.
Actually, just following up on another point, as RT, even just in my experience, it seems like a lot of the light rail stations, but essentially double the hubs for like the bus service for that part of the city or the region. So when that makes it, I guess that's such a big service area, even in many ways, they have the light rail stations, double the hubs, and then of course, like in Davis, essentially we have like two big hubs, they're not on campus, but they're both on campus, it's Memorial Union and the Silo. Not quite not as much of a hub for like local bus service, but there are a couple of trans lines and stuff there, and then of course they have track intercity buses as well as the trains.
All right, I have a motion. I have a second. I've had discussion. Everybody ready to vote? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carries. So, not a preferred alternative, at least from the CNC. I need to have a point of order because I was remiss on the agenda for not covering comments from the public on items not on the agenda earlier. And so this will now be that time for comments from the public regarding matters not on the agenda, but within purview of the Yolo Transit District. Comments are limited to 2 minutes per person. Please identify yourself and the community in which you reside before providing your comments. And with that, are there any members online who would like to address us?
There are no comments online.
Are there any members in the public who would like to address us here in the room? Being done, we're going to go into public comment. Thank you very much. And we will go on to item 5, which I know is on everyone's mind and in everybody's neighbor next door inbox, on downtown Sacramento detours and impact.
Oh, okay. So stepping into downtown. yes, as Lisa mentioned, that this is definitely a hot topic happening. So for members of the committee and the audience, my name is Xavier Mara. I'm the current acting director of transit operations. That is what I
think. Which spot did you
take
for your position?
It's a new position, but it originally came from the director of I-10 operations, who was Eric Wright.
Ah, okay, thank
you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so since the opening of our Golden One Center in downtown Sacramento, we've had a huge uptick in events occurring in the downtown area. It's actually part of the reason why we shifted our Route 42 is off of Capitol Hill because of so much events taking place. Part of the thing that we're seeing right now is all of these events, like parades, any kind of street closure happening on Capitol Hill, is also happening in conjunction with the Golden One Center closures. And so basically what that means for us is we have to detour our buses. And when we have to detour our buses, we usually have to close a lot of key stops in the downtown area. And as you've seen on our map, we don't have a lot of stops, especially in the central location already. And so when we have to kind of close those key stops and redirect everybody away from them, it creates a lot of confusion for our riders. So with the detours, we have several routes that are impacted, particularly our inner city route, our 42A and our 42B, which have our heaviest ridership. So the majority of our riders are impacted when they ride the 42. So our West Sacramento locals are also impacted because they also travel into downtown Sacramento. Our Woodland Express routes, as well as our Davis Express routes, so these closures are happening between the times of when the drop time service during the week, they also have to be detoured. Especially if it's this huge event on Capitol Mall, like when we do like the Ironman run, where they have to close from like Thursday to Sunday because it's such a big event that they need a stage on Capitol Mall. Those closures overlap as well. So essentially what you end up getting is you have a multi-day closure, which again, creates a huge inconvenience for our riders.
Next slide,
thank you. So with the closures, it's not always an actual detour, sometimes it's delayed, but as I mentioned, with the amount of events happening at the Golden West Center and on Hypo Mall, it's caused us to have to detour and do all these closures. Previously, before the opening of the Golden One Center, most of these events were limited to just Capitol Mall. And so basically what ended up happening was we got the closure and it was usually like sometime in the morning and then it was usually done by like lunchtime or like 2 p.m. and that was it. And so everybody kind of went home happy after that. But because these events are happening sometimes in the morning and then it overlaps with the Golden One Center events, you pretty much get like an all-day closure, which again causes the inconvenience. I've actually been in downtown when some of these closures are taking place and it literally took me like 20 minutes to go from like one block to the next because it was this huge, so it was a Farm to Fork Festival happening at the same time, but the very popular rock band was playing at the Golden One Center and I believe that day was also the Porch Festival happening sometime in downtown. So like a huge combination of like road closures and it created like this huge chaos and just like one day like traffic jam in the downtown area. So next slide.
So usually when we do our detours, we do have a procedure in place. And so typically when it is like a capital mall event for a Blue and Run Center event, we do get a dash notice of closures. For the Golden Run Center event, we usually already have dedicated like pre and post closures. Typically they happen along Capitol Mall and some of the side streets along Golden Run Center. And then the post, it starts to close a little bit more because everyone's kind of rushing out of the Golden Run Center at the same time. So, when we get all those notifications, we're pretty much on high alert at that point. So then we have our wonderful team of interns and our designer creating and designing our detour app. We usually post all of the notices at the stops that we're going to be closing. We try to at least do it in advance depending on when we get the information so that our riders are aware that this stop is going to be impacted. We'll post that on social media, we'll post it on the webpage under rider alerts. Not only that, but then we'll send out text alerts as well, letting our riders know, hey, this route is going to be impacted on this stage or any time, kind of plan accordingly. With the detour map, so the original map was designed to accommodate both the Golden Run Center and the Capitol Mall events that were overlapping. And so that's when you kind of see, so this was what was originally proposed so that we kind of avoided the red zones that you see from the red on Capitol Mall, and then 5th Street, I believe, and then I think it's also 8th Street, and then 9th Street as well. So that's where we kind of pushed everything north of all of that, because there's no more closures north of 8th Street, pretty much. So everything south of the Golden Run Center is what gets heavily impacted. And so to kind of minimize the impact for our route, and to keep on time, we basically pushed everything north. But as we found out, and as I mentioned earlier, when we do that closure, we have to close a lot of our key stops, including Capitol Mall at 7, including 9th and L, as well as Capitol Mall at 5. We do offer temporary stops, as well as the stops that are already in existence on Shade Street, but if you look at the map, that's a pretty far walk from where like Capitol Mall at front, which is where NBC Street was at, and Old Town Back. It's a pretty far walk. And even with the signage and all the anticipation, sometimes we get riders who just don't know, and so, like, as Andy mentioned, we get people distracted, and they're like, where do we go from there? All of this information is also provided through our operations contractor and store, so all of our dispatchers, our customer service people do have this information with them. So when people do call and ask, they'll have it. Again, and then nobody's perfect, so sometimes the information does get lost, and so when people call in, they don't always get the right information, but this is why we try to have as much of the information kind of out there so that the public can access it. So this is the one that we were using. So this is the new detour that our staff proposed and put it in place, I think it's gone on 2 weeks now, to accommodate not closing so many stops. And so this is just kind of something that we're testing out, where it's like, do we sacrifice our on-time performance in lieu of having these additional stops. So let's have one more first, excuse me, 9th and L, even have another temporary stop at, I believe, it's 8th and N Street, so that riders don't have to walk far away. One of the downsides could potentially be that we're adding a little bit more time to the route, but, is that something that we want to say, hey, we're okay with adding a little bit of the buses running a little bit late, if it means that people have a better chance of actually catching the bus in downtown versus the previous option. So this is the new route that we're closing. If you kind of look at it, it's like we're still closing some of our key stops, but we're just not closing as many as what we were before.
I think that will finish. Okay. Definitely do that. Yeah, so we definitely want to leave room for opportunities, and we definitely want to get your guys' feedback as to, you know, what we can do to make this better. You know, again, one of the questions that I proposed was, you know, do we continue adding more stops, even though the stuff might be running late, or do we keep it out how it was and keep it at running on time and sacrifice some of these stops? And so those are some of the questions that I proposed, and like our opportunities for improvement, which is what do we think would be the best option? Because I'm looking at the beach boards, I mean, the Golden West Center is not going to go away. The Capital Mall events are going to keep happening, especially with the increase now in the downtown businesses. There seems to be a lot more people, a lot more events going on. This is also part of the reason why FRT is actually no longer on Capital Mall as well. And one of the reasons why originally in the COA where we wanted to take all of our West Sacramento routes off of Capitol Mall because of all of the events happening and because of the impacts that it was making on our routes and our on-time performance and our riders being inconvenienced. But again, we're definitely seeing that uptick because of the crossover between the Golden One Center and the Capitol Mall event. So we just wanted to take this opportunity and say, you know, like, what do you guys think? I mean, at this point, we're open to all of our options and seeing, like, what we think would be the best choice to address
these issues.
Great.
Oh, and you're up. Sure. I'm sure there's a good reason for this. Basically, that why does the Fearless path here all the way around there, why not use the Tower Bridge in West Gap? Because of the bridge or
no, so usually when we do this closure, it's also in conjunction with Capital Mall event. So typically what will end up happening is like Tower Bridge won't be closed in some cases, but Third Street East will. And so basically what we'll do is keep being across Tower Bridge, but then we'll be forced to come down Third Street and then use like entry, which that's actually the street that I got stuck on for like 20 minutes just moving one block. And so one of the ways to work is everybody's being pushed in that direction. That's one of the things that we have to keep in mind, is that these closures don't just impact us, but it's everybody else trying to get into downtown as well. And so one of the ways we avoid kind of having to get some testing traffic is using the freeway.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Once
you get off, yeah.
So it's actually a lot quicker,
mm-hmm.
even though it's longer.
Yeah,
we ended
up bypassing all of that.
Okay,
Andy, go. Thank you, and first of all, I really appreciate you getting this on the agenda so we can discuss it. I know that I sent the email again last month, but I really appreciate the work that's gone into getting this on the agenda and the opportunity to discuss it. Before we get into, I mean, I want to get into like a little deeper discussion of just like strategies of just broadcasting and the routing or strategies of engaging in Sacramento with that PD, like stuff like that. But first of all, just one thing I'd like to point out with the detour group is just that my experience using the bus when it's been detoured, I see that it's supposed to like kind of go around Grayley Field and serve the stop next to the stadium. But in my experience, the bus has just always gone straight up Fifth Street, made the left onto made the left towards West Capitol, and not serve that Grayley Field stop. So this is something that I know that's been my experience, like, that's something, it's ironically, like, if there's an event going on at Golden One, that makes it harder to take the bus to an event at, well, what's now Center Hall Park. So that's just one thing, is at least in my experience, I've never seen the bus do that route around Grayley Field, so has that changed recently, or is that something that just needs to be communicated better to the drivers? They need to go around the stadium to serve that stuff.
Good question. Yeah, it's something that we do on and off, because typically sometimes, like, if there's, like, an event, like, a race happening near Center Hall Park, sometimes we can't always go down that back road, and I forget what that street name is. Not the street, but the one that we're showing in the map. So sometimes it just depends on the type of event. And so maybe it's just, there are variations of this, but this is essentially
actually the one that we, not this one, but the previous one, where we try to go through that side street so that we are able to accommodate them. Sometimes the drivers just, they have mine around.
You are like, oh, open street. And they're like, you know, do kind of like go off a route. And, you know, we have to kind of be reminding our dispatchers, and dispatchers have to be telling her, hey, make sure you're sticking to the detour map, because especially if someone is, you know, waiting at a stop and then they just kind of watch the bus that drive by on Fifth Street and they're like, but I was supposed to get picked up. So,
yeah.
It's a combination, and we sometimes, like I said, it just depends on the event. Sometimes we have variations of the detour map, or sometimes like the drivers are like, it's like, I'm so used to taking this like Fifth Street detour that I forgot I was supposed to kind of go around instead of turning.
Yeah, I think that's good to know. I guess, like, at least in my experience, like, I guess I would write at this time, and I wouldn't be confident, like, using that stop when I know a detour is going on. I'll just walk, so I'll go through the inconvenience of walking to the next one, because at least I know the bus will be stopping there. So at least that's the situation right now. But then they would be happy to, definitely appreciate seeing that change. And then also, I actually haven't been aware of the, you have the chance to serve the 9th and K stop. Just looking at this, I guess, I mean, my thought and I have experience it yet. My thought would be that it was a long addition to the route, just that there were more stop. But I'm curious, like, do you have any data yet on how that's impacted, like, travel times and on-time performance with that new routing?
Not yet, but we are working on getting all that information. And we have to wait for a good chunk of events to happen or maybe get that information, but it's one of the things that we're testing out. And so it could just be that maybe we are taking a lot longer than what we needed, because, you know, just to get, how you said, that one additional stop. But again, it's at this point, we're just kind of playing around with the idea of what would work best. And unfortunately, because of all the one-way streets in downtown, it's really hard to, you know, maneuver around the downtown area with that, so.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, that's always tricky in our head. I mean, I know that this has been kind of an unusual situation with Golden One. I know if we can go into more detail later on, but want to give other folks a chance first. But I just also just want to say that, I mean, I know it's tough, and I'll admit, I mean, there have been times when I've been in part responsible for a couple of these detours by, like, running in races and stuff like that that caused them, so.
Does the city require any kind of traffic control and people, and there's two or more big events going on?
To notify?
Yeah, they help speed things up through the traffic signs and all. Have they considered doing that?
I'm not sure if I'm in it. Like, do you mean, like, notify us as in, like, saying, hey, there's an event happening, or, like, the traffic?
Well, that's an active part of it. When this happens, do you put anything online on the YOLA website?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
So we can monitor it.
Yeah, so typically the city will notify us, especially the Golden One Center event. They do have their reporting calendars every month. They send them out. And we'll take that information and we'll start planning accordingly. We'll typically post all of your information like 3 days before the event happens. We'll post like actual signage, so we'll like decide to go to the spot that's being impacted. We'll also send out those detour maps and to our contractor and experts if they have them, but then we'll post them online under our red alert page. And if you go to each individual route, so say for example you click on 42A, it'll have like in red, it'll say like service announcement. If you click on it, it'll take you to the service alert page. And it'll tell you like all of the events happening for that specific day. Not only that, but we also send out text alerts and email alerts. So if you're registered for our alerts, you'll receive them as well.
Okay.
And I would say they are also pushing them out on Neighbor Next Door, so if you're enrolled on Neighbor Next Door, you'll see them through that service as well. Any other questions on this end?
More than I can do, I can wait till after public comment.
Okay. I have one comment for me. And just like that, I appreciate it. It looks like there's, you know, lots of attempts at reaching folks. Like specifically, I was happy to see texting because I think that that's a really important way to reach people.
Mm-hmm.
And then, also to just to voice the frustration. I wasn't going to contribute because I don't have anything constructive other than it's really frustrating sometimes when there's only one way, you know, in and out of West Sacramento, or there's a few ways in and out of West Sacramento downtown. I've also contributed to those closures, but I look at this and I see it's, and it's just such a combination of factors. It's not just city or city, but it's also the capital and the libraries and just the layout. So there's a lot that you all are up against here. And so I'm just looking at this, trying to see if anything pops out, and it looks like the 22 RFPs cover a lot of the options that are there. So kudos if you're looking for ways to add efficiencies and improve.
I think the only thing I'd ask is that this is becoming the regular norm and not the anomaly that it might behoove to find alternative routes that could be more permanent and of course it could be a big staff time saving as well and easier on the operators to remember which route they're supposed to plan and stop at.
Mm-hmm.
So guys just, you know, start to collect data on how common those are. They certainly seem to have been common this year.
I'm looking at the staff in the corner. I'm just trying to go out there. I want to do a lot of bad work. But I mean, one thing I'll just kind of say that with the New Woodland Transit Center, we will of course be looking at having to reroute every time the 42s. And so one of the things we've talked about is as part of that process, do we also take a look at downtown Sacramento as well? And to your point, Madam Chair, you know, is there a better permanent route that recognizes the new normal of downtown Sacramento so that we can sort of permanently avoid some of these areas that are kind of short.
We appreciate that. Okay, let's take a public comment and then we'll take another round from users. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to speak on the subject? None. Are there anybody online?
They won't
comment. There are no comments online. So, next round. Andrew, I know you already put your...
Yeah, I can pick it up. I appreciate that. I definitely support the concept of as the roofs are being looked at, getting a roof that can be used like permanently both during events and not during events. But ideally, I mean, that would be an event that can both serve, like, the Golden One Center and actually provide convenient service for people going to and from these events, as well as people going elsewhere in downtown or transferring the light rail to get to other parts of Sacramento. So with that, it would be great, like, if that route also could be, like, actually on roads that don't have car traffic on them, that would really help keep the service on time during those events and make it more attractive for people to take transit to them. I'd like to hear more about what the possibilities are in your view for engagement with the city of Sacramento on that. And I think it'd be good to provide some context on how that's been over time. Because I know, like, since Golden One is open, and apologize, I haven't lived here that whole time, so I'm just kind of generally familiar with it. But I know, like, at first there was the wide shuttle that was able to stop right at Golden One Center, but the issue was it was like the people had to then trip, like the 42 didn't go downtown at all, and people had to transfer in West Sacramento. But again, I think just more context on the history of it would be beneficial, and then what you all think are, like, if, like, would it be beneficial, like, if, say, all of the 42, all of the West Sac routes and the express routes were consolidated onto, like, the same routing through downtown. That would give you all a better position in engaging with Sacramento to make sure that route can be, like, dedicated both during and not during events and like ideally prioritize for transit.
Yeah, all great points, Andy. Yeah, so the Y Shuttle used to be a service that operated for the Golden One Center. It started at the West Sacramento Transit Center. Just speaking in general in the downtown area, because it also left Davis and Wilson, but it would leave the West Sacramento Transit Center and then it would basically cross the street, serve the stops in downtown, and then yes, it would actually serve the stop at, like, literally right at the entrance that LS did. Basically, what was happening was buses did get priority, so no other traffic was allowed, but then it started creating all kinds of concerns from SAC-PD when people would kind of leave the stadium and, you know, they were crossing the street, and so it created all these safety concerns, and so we were no longer allowed to use L Street anymore. So we basically had to kind of, again, start detouring around. We had a lot of conversations of reaching out to SAC-PD and even working with Golden One Center and being like, can we, like, go back on L Street? And, I mean, if there's a specific time, like, maybe just before the next stop to end, that we can, you know, used it, but it would basically cut these detours in half. It wouldn't be as chaotic as it is right now if we were allowed to use all of the streets that are closed during the Golden One Center. I mean, during Capitol Mall events, there's not really much we can do because if they have a huge stage set up, I mean, can't really go through. But at least for the Golden One Center, we have started conversations about reaching out to the city, Golden One Center, and SAC-PD, so that, you know, we can have that access again. I don't know if I can address your question.
I think that's a great point, and that's good to know about the issue. That's good to know about the prior issues when the buses were trying to use the L Street and there were issues or conflicts with people with the pedestrians coming out of the event. I'd be curious, like, has there been engagement with, like, I mean, beyond SAC-PD, like, with that city government, like city council, the mayor's office, just coming in and good engagement with those. I mean, they seem to have the original investment in that. The reason having a downtown area was part of the idea was building something that was more friendly to transit versus the old fleet curve versus the old, like, Arco arena.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they should, I mean, those bodies should be supportive of having convenient, reliable transit service to the arena. So have there been engagement with those parties? Has it been potentially encouraging them to work it out with SAC-PD to make sure that, like, good transit service to the arena is a priority?
Currently, no. But, I mean, as I mentioned, you know, we want to explore all of our options. So if that means talking to, you know, city council or anyone with the city of Sacramento or even West Sacramento, to be like, hey, can we get some help here? You know, that's definitely on the radar.
The thing I would also take note is that the city is working, the city and state have got a grant to look at common routing for buses that are coming to downtown Sacramento from the outlying areas, not the Hillow County, but Sutter, Roseville, etc. And they have identified a preferred routing and they're going to be working on putting in some, like, transit stops, because right now those buses kind of stop all over the place. And so we're technically, our buses are exempt from that. We don't, they're basically kind of making everybody who's doing the long distance express buses use those buses because ours are considered local. We don't have to. But that is an opportunity that I think to kind of have some conversation there and see if there's a way that we can actually integrate our buses into that common routing that they're using. And my hope would be that in addition to just doing amenities for passengers, that maybe some of your, you know, signal priority, other, you know, other things to help be handled on those routes would be an investment if you want.
Well, it also builds out the sort of Hillow to Poncia Sacramento connection, which is part of what the CAC has been interested in.
Right, exactly. It does help if you're coming from Roseville, then you might be able to then transfer to a Yolo bus, or if you're going from Roseville to Davis. Or, yeah, I think that's part of the goal with that process.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Who has transit now?
Patrick in Poland.
Great. I actually wanted to add on to Andy's question and ask if there's an engagement with, like, is it Sacramento, like the Tourism Bureau, or like Golden One Center for, like, a long range calendar of events? to keep an eye on, or even downtown Sacramento partnership. To try to have just like an eye on what's like coming down the pike, you know?
Yeah, we used to have connections with, I believe her name was Melissa Romero, and she worked for the City of Sacramento, like, for media events, and she would send out, like, this huge, like, whole sheet of, like, these are all the events that basically have permits to happen in, on that one mall. And so we would basically take that, plus what the program was that they gave us, and then we would kind of, like, start doing the analysis, even sometimes, like, even a week before the closure happened. Not really sure what happened to her. I'm not sure if she's still in the city. But since that pretty much fell off when COVID happened, I'm assuming it has picked up again. We just probably fell off of the listserv, but definitely something we can attach that on.
Hey, Paul. Just curious about who has transit now for takeout.
I'm sorry, you mean like staff?
Yeah, right.
The folks that I'm aware of are Barbara Von Bentel, Michael Rossen, and Chris Story.
Okay, I'm not sure of those names.
There may be others, but those are the ones I know.
Is one in charge, or are they all about the same level?
They're all about the same level. The director of transportation is Christina Stuck now, and she oversees all of those.
Christina
Stuck.
Okay.
Let me do mispronouncing her name. It's got too many. Not enough dollars. Too many consonants. Sorry, Christina, if you're watching.
Any other feedback from members?
Do you have what you need from us?
Yeah, I think I have enough feedback to definitely get that. So the drawing board and seeing what we can do.
Great. And also, I appreciate the input and feedback about eliminating the issue.
So the City Council of Mayor's Office.
It's a good
one. Something we should talk about. Be great. I'm going to swap up the agenda a slight bit and ask that we do the executive director report and the long-range calendar and the DCAC number reports at the end.
Okay. Sounds good. I want to start with an update on the Yolo Eating Man Wings. So, let's see. Just to kind of recap where we are, we are waiting for Caltrans to release the draft environmental document for the project. It is among the first in the region to address the new VMT requirements, and as such, been getting a lot of scrutiny. To my understanding, issues around the VMT mitigation strategy are now resolved, and this is breaking news, but as of today, the governor's office is saying they have reviewed and confirmed an intent to release it next Monday, November 13th, which happens to be the date of our board meeting. In addition, we are also working on what's called our tolling advanced planning process. We received a $2 million grant from State College earlier this year to basically lead the technical work and governance conversations around establishing a regional tolling authority that would help implement this component of State House and Regional Plan, which is to implement basically congestion pricing on our freeways. So in the event that Caltrans is able to move this EIR forward in a timely manner and express lanes are chosen as the preferred alternative, which we at Yolo City sincerely hope they are, then we would need to essentially go to the California Transportation Commission in March with a tolling authority application, which, and again, involves a lot of technical work and also a lot of decisions around governance, who would be in charge, who would be in charge of power authority, et cetera. So we are optimistically moving forward with a scope of work that would allow us to bring a tolling authority application to the CTC in March of 2024, again, assuming that the EIR is released and is able to kind of proceed. So there are a number of elements, concept of operation, a traffic and revenue study, establishment of a tolling authority interagency agreement, all of which are things that we have been working on for many months now, but we now have a deadline, which is March of 2024, and we're working to accelerate those efforts to be ready to move that forward if an express lane project is approved by Caltrans. So that's a complicated and convoluted report, but it's what I have on that issue. A couple other things I want to talk about, and I'm happy to answer questions. It's the annual unmet transit needs process. It's that time of year again. This is an annual process organized by SACOG. It's a requirement under the Transportation Development Act and helps inform how those funds are spent. On Monday the 23rd, of course, your guys right then, SACOG held a four-county Zoom hearing for the four counties that SACOG oversees for this process. That's us, Sacramento, Yuba, and Penn Center. And then they also had a table to Davis Farmers Market last Wednesday, November 1st. Davey attended both of those meetings and was on hand to answer questions. I was briefly at one of them. The comment period for the unmet needs process does remain open through the end of the year. Next item I want to just update you on is the CAQ recruitment. We do, of course, now have three vacant at-large seats based on the changes that were made to the composition. Last week we met with the chair to have her review our materials, including the application and all of the advertising materials that we'll be posting in our buses and distributing to different agencies. I think yesterday Heather sent to you an Excel document. I think you may have kind of crowded here. All the places that the organizations that we're planning to contact to advertise the vacancies. The vacancies and encourage them to get people to apply. So if you have additions to this list, please let Heather know so that we can get the word out. We also discussed the process by which the CAQ will participate in vetting candidates. Basically, based on the chair's suggestion, we want to see if we can have a member of the board and a member of the CAQ. And then a member of staff works together to interview prospective candidates, and then make recommendations to the board and to recruit to the CAC to take to the board. For the CAC to then recommend to the board to fill those vacancies. And then lastly, one item that was supposed to be on the agenda tonight, but we had to bump because we had these other agenda items that were more time sensitive, is an update on our Yule Act Transportation Corridor project, or YASI. That project, we are sorry we couldn't bring it to you tonight, but that project is underway now, and we're excited that it is kicking off, and we'll be bringing you an update on that in January, which also is around the time we're going to be launching a lot of public engagement activities after the holiday season. So just wanted to share with you that we apologize we didn't have that update tonight. We didn't want to give you too long of an agenda. But look forward to sharing that with you in January. And that concludes my report.
Do you have anything for the long-range calendar?
We do have a long-range calendar, yes. Let's see. In January slash February, now, based on the motion that you did as part of the consent calendar, we now have that meeting set for January 20th. So we're appointing the chair and vice chair for that year, approved meeting dates for the rest of the year. We give an update, as I mentioned, on the YASI project, also an update on revisions to our paratransit policies and rider information. Of course, an update on the Yule meeting and planning process. And then for the subsequent meeting, which will be scheduled in January, we'll be starting our annual work plan and budgeting process. We'll be getting started after New Year, so we want to make sure we get your input on that, including the CAC's work plan, the items you want to make sure that we are working on, and then our overall work plan for the organization as a whole. And then hopefully at that point, the rerouting to serve the new Woodland Transit Center. So first, some of the conversations we've been having tonight. And of course, the OAE management update. A lot's going to be happening on that project the next few months, so you should probably expect an update on it every meeting.
Thank you very much. So this is an item for clarifying questions, but no action. So are there questions? And okay.
For the upcoming items on the YOLO 80 managed lanes, would it be possible to get a presentation from, I think it would be interesting, I think, at least for the committee to hear from both Caltrans staff, District 3 staff working on the project, as well as Jean Ward Waller, former director of planning and modal programs, who was recently, for any of you who don't know, she was recently demoted, allegedly due to input she was trying to provide on that project. So I think it'd be useful to hear from both of those, from both staff working on the project and from her.
That potentially could be fairly awkward, Andrew.
Well, we're just going to clarify the question. I think Dave's point that staff working on the project, giving us a presentation would be good and not necessarily deforming what or that that is.
Well, from the little bit I know about it, that just that might be offered to both the agency and the employee.
If I may, apart, I'll just turn around saying, if our legal counsel were here, I think that they would tell us that given that Ms. Ford Waller has filed a lawsuit against Caltrans, it does mean some of the project activities here in Yolo County, not this project in particular, right, but primarily the project that is currently under construction. Nonetheless, we have been advised to limit contact with her because we may end up being involved in that lawsuit. So I think if our attorney were here, I mean, we'll go back and talk to them about it, but I think they would suggest that that might be problematic.
I think this is in the context of a project update and hearing from whoever they designate.
The November 13th announcement, I'm just not sure I understand entirely what that will include. So this is to approve or just, you mentioned the governor's office. I thought they aren't the ones that approve. Yeah, I'm confused.
Sure. No, so, yeah, to clarify, so Caltrans, the governor's office has been involved in this for whatever reason, anyhow.
Yeah. For whatever reason.
I think, again, it goes back to the fact that there is this new VMT mitigation policy that Caltrans is newly implemented by Caltrans, and with CAPSI, the state's commitment to change the way we invest in transportation to align with our climate goals. My understanding is the government also has gotten a lot more involved in a lot of projects that are involved highway extensions, not just ours.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're special, not that special. In terms of what's going to happen on November 13th, the EIR is going to be released. We don't expect, so then there will be a 45-day public comment period that's required under law. And so we don't expect that, if indeed the EIR is released that day, Caltrans is not going to be prepared to present on it or ask what, you know, answer questions on it, and we don't expect our board to have, you know, level of credit or try any conversation. So the fact that it happens to be really being released the day of our board meeting is just an unfortunate coincidence. In terms of it's not at all what we asked for, by any means. So I think, what we would likely do is have a conversation about it with our board at the December board meeting, which would be still within that 45-day public comment period. Would allow them to have a presentation from Caltrans and ask their questions and make any comments at that time. Does that clarify?
I guess so, but I guess to try to read the room, so we're expecting that they'll reject it because of the controversy. Is that right? I don't know if that's appropriate to talk about here. I feel like it's kind of confusing. It's like there's a controversy versus project and other projects like it, and there's sort of this pressure to sort of go back to the drawing board, or?
So the Caltrans is the lead agency, and so they'll be the ones that are making the determination on whether or not the environmental impact report is sufficient. Mm-hmm. The Yolo TD board will, I assume, want to make comments. I'm not going to predict what kind of comments they would want to make, you know, that's up to them. And they haven't even seen the EIR yet. So I won't speculate as to what kind of action they would recommend. I know that the Davis City Council has also talked to, you know, expressed an interest in reviewing the EIR and in comments. And of course, the City of West Sacramento, Yolo County, the City of Woodland, any of these agencies are free to make comments under CEQA and it's appropriate to do so. I would ask if, you know, I guess the question for the CAC is whether or not the CAC would want to weigh in as well, either as a group or individually. I haven't really thought this through because I just got this information today, but I would just put that out there as a question as well.
So I guess I would say 30 days, but I do know that the CAC has been really united around the equity and social justice issue. So I would assume that since there is an equity social justice component to the EIR, that would be of interest to the CAC. But
I mean, if there is interest in the CAC member, then having, you know, trying to schedule a special meeting that takes place during the 45-day public comment period, that's certainly something we could look at doing to make Caltrans come to that.
So I got with that. So perhaps what we can do is survey members in a report and see what we can put together.
So we have to make a public comment. It's trying to clarify. If we were to have a special meeting, it would have to be like publicized.
Yes. But yeah. The poll is just to see is there appetite coming in and what are good dates.
Mm-hmm. I apologize. There was kind of multiple conversations happening. I'm going to share what Brian said to make it a very good point. As an advisory body, I think it would be most valuable for you all to have that conversation prior to the board meeting so then the board would have the benefit of your discussion rather than having that conversation after the board meeting.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
You were suggesting that we just essentially do a poll?
We do a poll for to find out dates, times, and after.
Okay.
As a member, so we can make those kind of things.
Okay.
Any other clarifying questions on this report? Remember, these are not action items.
I was under the impression that the, general things that I've heard about the YCD board's position, as well as some comments you made earlier today, that the board had, and the chair at that time, Tom Stallman, had basically indicated that they liked the project, they liked the managed lane project. So I'm not clear on the, if that's true, then I'm not clear on why we would, they would need advice from.
So the EIR will include, I think, 14 different alternatives for the project, some of which include tolling, some of which don't. NCAN will, for the first time, publicly detail both the benefits and the potential drawbacks of each of those alternatives. And so I would imagine that the board would appreciate the CAC's input on whether or not there are particular alternatives that the CAC prefers. And also, you know, based on any insights you have on the impact, there's also a whole VMC mitigation strategy that includes things like increased transit services and, you know, investment in tuning up programs, et cetera. So if there are potential VMC mitigation measures that maybe are mentioned, for example, that ought to be included to help address that. Or if there are other mitigation measures that are missing, I know one issue that's come up, for example, is in parts of Davis that maybe sound walls would be appropriate. So those are the sorts of things that I think that the board would appreciate getting input from the CAC so that the board can make some of those recommendations to help in.
I'd also just like to reiterate that the environmental process is to determine the ability of the project to move forward in its configuration, and so it's really important that the board wait for that information so it can make an informed decision and not predicated on prior stuff.
So. One more quick clarifying question about the board's ultimate stay in that project. And just to give us a heads up before we go forward, again, I know Caltrans is the lead, the lead agency on the environmental review, but then it was YOLO-PD that actually received the award for the $86 million of federal funding for this project. So I'd be curious, I'm not completely sure, like, what exactly would the board, like, say that, I mean, I'm not saying this would happen, but if somehow, like, Caltrans ultimately chose an alternative that the board didn't like, would the board, like, have the authority to, like, refuse to give the $86 million to the project? Or, I mean, I'm not saying that happened, but just in theory.
Yeah, so as the awardee of the grant, we have the responsibility of obligating those funds. So we have to apply to the federal government to actually do a requesting obligation of those funds. Then what would happen is that we would also sign a cooperative agreement with Caltrans, essentially saying, okay, then we are going to then pay Caltrans to construct this project on our behalf. And we would, you know, we would receive invoices from Caltrans, we would pay those invoices, and then we would get reimbursed by the federal government. The YOLO-PD board could decide not to obligate those federal funds, and forfeit those.
you know, or to not sign that cooperative agreement with Caltrans.
Thank you. So before I move on to the last item, safety reports, are there any members of the public online or in the room that want to make a comment?
Then we'll move it online.
Okay, you're good. All right, let's take CAC comments and let's start on my left.
No, I don't.
Yeah, I'll add a couple quick updates. So with Davis, the DTSSC, last month we had a joint meeting actually of the bicycling transportation and street safety commission and the Unitrans advisory committee where we discussed a couple of important items. One of those that was the unmet transit need. So appreciate you bringing that up. That process is underway. We discussed that. That's something we're at least in the Davis level. We're discussing. I know it's something that there's some discussion starting on like potentially strategizing for encouraging Davis to dedicate their local transportation funds, their TDA, to transit. Some of that currently gets used for local streets and roads. So that's one of the discussions that we're hoping to continue for the next few months, so I'll keep you updated on that. And also we discussed Davis, they also have their issues with the Unitrans, and this includes stops that Yellow Bus serves as well. There have been issues with people parking in the bus stops, and then that prevents the stops from being ADA accessible. So we voted to recommend that council, with more than 30 bus stops, that they're going to be painting red curbs at to prevent parking in those bus stops and make them ADA accessible. Unfortunately, there were, I think, about 7 where there were public comments. There were comments, from residents who lived nearby, who have other people parking in those stops who didn't want those red curbs. So those are unfortunately put on hold, but those discussions will continue. But they did approve more than 30 of them. Or we hopefully council will approve, but we recommended council approve more than 30 and staff back that as well. So hopefully that will keep moving forward. The next DTSSC meeting is I'm blanking on the exact date, but it will be in the first week or two of December, which should the EIR come out on schedule for YOLO 80, that would fall in that 45-day period. So I'll be sure to communicate that with staff, because that would be the time, I think, because I know that body is also interested in commenting on the EIR. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've been glad to see V-line buses around Vegas within today.
Mm-hmm.
That's got encouraging to see them in use. On the, to be hopeful for me to know the 4 years, I think it's going to be October 2024, because I started, I believe, November of 2020. And then ad hoc was helping me think from 2017 to 2020. The other issue is looking at minutes, was about the stipend. I don't know where that have some of us signed up for that. Maybe you could give us an update now. Or...
Yeah, Heather, remind me, I think you were just in the process of processing a bunch of those. Is that right?
We are processing a bunch of them. We are missing some documents.
Yeah.
So I will send an email out to everyone that we're missing information from. That's the question to the media.
Some of us said no, thank you.
Thank you.
And Stephen, we can also get back to you with the information about your term.
Well, I was going to recommend the same thing, so maybe we get all the
information. Okay, there you go.
And I think that some of your comments you answered the question that I had.
So I also want to say it's pleasurable to see the Dean line running about, and me and my girlfriend are already making plans to avail ourselves of that. So looking forward to doing so. I also had the opportunity recently to take the San Joaquin from Amtrak, looking at the real possibility, talking about aligning those inner city stops. But that is a pretty slick operation if you haven't done that. So you can get from Davis to the LA train station in just about 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
very, very swift handoff. So for those who don't know, it's a train and two buses, really well done. So good thing you have that right there at the Davis Country. So that's all I have.
Yeah, actually, just the same walking is just this past weekend also, so.
I never drive there again. And it was right back from the Coast Bar line. You left it on the Coast Bar line. It could be 12 hours. Coast Bar line, always late. It is always late. It's beautiful, but always really long.
It is really long.
And with that, I think we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Already spent 3 hours.